Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about one of the big ones of this year. We're talking about Mank, David Fincher's new film that's out now on Netflix about the guy who wrote Citizen Kane, considered by many to be the best movie of all time. I watched it earlier this year for the first time, and you know what? It's actually pretty good. It's a good movie. But we are going to be talking about Mank, and joining me is MN Miller from Ready Steady Cut. I've been wanting to get him on the show for a while now, so I'm really happy to have him here on Piecing It Together. So that is coming up in a minute. But before we get to that conversation, I do want to remind you to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can find us on any of the major podcast apps. And we also have our own app now. It's currently only available on Android phones, so go to the Google Play Store and search for Piecing It Together. And you can download a all-encompassing Piecing It Together app that has all of the episodes of the podcast, as well as my Letterboxd reviews, my Twitter and Facebook feeds for the show, and everything else that you would want to see or get about Piecing It Together, all in one place. So check that out. It's free. And yeah, you could also, of course, rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or wherever you listen to podcasts that happens to have reviews. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And one last thing, don't forget about our Patreon, where we post advanced episodes of the podcast, as well as bonus content from this podcast, An Awesome Movie Year, another great movie podcast you should be listening to, as well as my music career. So lots of great content over on the Patreon. So let's get into Mank. There's a lot to talk about with this movie, so let's get into it. All right, so today on the show, we are going to be talking about a movie that it's kind of impossible for us to have finished off the year without getting to this one. We're talking about David Fincher's Mank, and with me is MN Miller. How's it going, man?
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. Doing great. How about you?
I am doing all right. I am, you know, getting to the end of trying to make my year-end list and watch as much as I possibly can so I can finish that list off strong. It is, it's tough. There's so much out there. But of course, we have to cover this movie. It's kind of one I think people want to hear about a little bit, it seems like.
Yeah, well,
maybe it's a David Fincher thing. Maybe it's a Citizen Kane thing. A little of everything that goes into this movie. I think it's just...
It's also very timely, too, with the themes and issues that go on with the movie.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. And I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of that as we start getting into some puzzle pieces. But before we do, it is your first time here on the show. So I'd love it if you'd, you know, kind of introduce yourself to our listeners here.
Well, my name is, as you said, MN Miller. I write for a website called Ready Steady Cut. We're a film site primarily dedicated to streaming content. We were kind of the first ones to do this for a couple years, and everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon because of COVID this year. So I've written about 400 reviews the past 2 years, and I'm also part of the Nevada Film Critic Society.
Are you based here in Vegas?
I am.
Yeah, you are. Okay. Yeah. How do we not run into each other? I mean, obviously, you know, nobody's running into anybody right now, but
we actually have twice.
Yeah. Just I thought it was just once, but yeah, I guess it was twice, huh? But yeah, we should run into each other more often, it seems like.
Well, you got me a ticket to the John Wick 3, which
sure.
I appreciate yep. way back yeah. in the day. And of course, your family owns that great vinyl shop in town. So.
That's right. You did come by there. So that was the other time. I forgot about that. But right on, man. I'm glad to finally get you here on the show. And I obviously sent you a list of some movies that we're looking to possibly cover. This was one that you were... interested in right from the jump. Was this a movie that you had been like kind of looking forward to all year? Are you like a huge Fincher fan? Was this like a big one for you?
Oh, I'm a huge David Fincher fan. There's pretty much nothing. Well, Benjamin Button, I liked. I didn't love. I think most people feel that way after the past couple of years. But most everything he does is just genius to me. And I was very excited about this, hearing about it. Hearing the history of it, the fact that his dad wrote the screenplay and they never got to produce it. So I was very excited about it, not to mention the content and just the history of, film royalty with Citizen Kane. I think any cinephile or any film critic was very excited about this when they heard about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that this is just a very rich movie filled with just a lot on its mind. And, mm-hmm. Despite how much people maybe like it necessarily, I think that there's just a lot to like really dig into, which is, it's really exciting for any movie and especially for someone like Fincher to come out with something a little different for him, I think. But also, I mean, there's certainly some themes involved that are things that he's explored before. But for the most part, I think this is kind of a little different for him. But I think we might as well start jumping into puzzle pieces right away, and we'll get into a whole lot of those ideas and themes and everything that's going on with this movie. And usually I'll ask my guests to go first, but I think it's probably a good idea just to get it out of the way to just start off with Citizen Kane itself.
Yes.
Because I think that that's kind of going to be hanging over the conversation otherwise, and it's very important to talk about. I have a couple of thoughts. I'm sure you do too. But yeah, the movie that is at the center of this story, of course, is Orson Welles' Citizen Kane from 1941, and considered by many the greatest movie ever. Mm-hmm. I actually just watched it for, I'm pretty sure, the first time earlier this year in preparation for this movie. I might have seen it back in high school. I couldn't quite remember. But aside from, just the obvious that it's the subject matter of the movie is, circles around the creation of the script for Citizen Kane. There's also a lot of other comparisons that could be made as well, from the way the film is shot and presented, as well as to kind of the back and forth nature of the story. And then Mankiewicz himself being this kind of larger than life character who, is just like kind of a giant in his particular realm. And of course, not as big as Kane himself, but still he's in his own right, a big character in this movie.
Oh, that's a humongous character. I think the biggest thing why cinephiles and film critics like ourselves, it's a huge mystery. It's a debate on who was more responsible for that movie, who was responsible for the screenplay. It's almost been like a national legend for years.
Right.
And it has that intrigue to it. And I think a lot of Mank, it has to do with your enjoyment of it. It has to do with be predicated on your self-proclaimed love of films, and especially Citizen Kane. But I think most people can enjoy it and can relate to the themes that are going on in the film. Like fear propaganda, sure. the cultivating communication in a way that our current political leaders, like the current president, tries to control the narrative with lies. And that's essentially what Mank and Citizen Kane is all about. And back to what you're saying about watching Citizen Kane, I tried to rewatch that. I really tried to rewatch it before this past month. I had not had the time, so it's been a long time since I watched it.
Yeah, it was my probably first time watching it when I watched it last month, and it was very interesting how much of that it just ties directly into what we've been going on in this country these last few years. And it's crazy how that stuff just, it just stays evergreen and continues to be a part of the conversation. And, you know, especially with the changes Hollywood's going through right now, that also adds to it as well. And, you know, not quite knowing what the, you know, what the character of Hollywood itself, you know, is what its reputation is, and you know, finding out little things behind the scenes where it doesn't quite live up to what you expected.
Almost too, when Citizen Kane was being made, and there's all this propaganda films at the time coming out, like military propaganda films. And I remember when the change happened with the presidency, people were talking about the first type of how that politics influence so much of Hollywood, and you saw a lot of that happen the past couple of years. It's really relevant today in that issue. So I think you make a great point about that.
So what do you got for another piece here?
Can You Ever Forgive Me, with Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, nice.
A lot about Mank is about taking credit, receiving credit. And a big part of Can You Ever Forgive Me was she could not get paid for, when she got paid for her writing, but then she was out of work. And then she could not, at the end, she was very, very upset that she could not get credit for her letters she was creating. And essentially with Mank, the same thing happened by the end where, you know, he was receiving all this money from the studio. Orson Welles was trying to give him more money, more type of compensation to take credit for the screenplay. But by the end of the film, he clearly, what was more important was not the money, was receiving credit for his work. And that's one, a lot of good movies about writers the past couple of years, and that's one of the better ones I've seen.
Yeah, that is a great movie. And it's a similarly messy character, but that is just kind of fascinating to go along with their journey, even though they're kind of a mess, and they're just so interesting and intriguing and kind of captivating that you want to know, first of all, what's going to happen with them, and are they going to make it in what they're trying to do? But you know, you also are kind of rooting for them despite their problems.
Yeah, and the Melissa McCarthy character, it's kind of like Mank without the term, I think, is real. That's how I would equate it.
For sure, for sure.
What about you?
Well, I will go on to another movie that I think has probably been mentioned a lot of times in conversation with Mank, and that's the Coen Brothers film Hail Caesar, which is, you know, a satire of a different era of old Hollywood, the 50s instead of the 30s, and kind of also shows that thin line between politics and Hollywood, and also another movie that kind of, for a lot of people, you know, maybe, you know, they think of the old, you know, idea of Hollywood being, you know, a liberal place, you know, liberals and lefties and all that stuff. But then you find out, like, oh, it's kind of always been a lot of conservatives behind the scenes pulling strings. After all, this is big business and, you know,
big money.
Lots of money going around. So, of course, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. But then once you see it up there on the screen, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess I never really considered that aspect of Hollywood. But it's certainly there. And I think that these movies definitely kind of go together really well as a picture of what Hollywood, that like the darker side of that part of Hollywood.
I think, and I didn't pick this movie, but based on what you said about the conservative big wigs in the shadows type business executives, like the movie Judy. The rest of the character was, but the executive, the head of the studio, who they portray physically abusing her to get her to control her, get her to be in character and get in line with what the studio needed for shooting and for propaganda too. I think that's another good angle that film brought to the movie.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, once you get to those kind of characters who just kind of like, they're just kind of addicted to their power and lording it over like everybody in the creative realm. You get some pretty shady shit. All right. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
The next one I have is The Majestic.
Okay.
The Jim Carrey flop.
Yeah.
From 2001. I personally love that movie. I think it's Jim Carrey's, people say The Truman Show, but I think it's his best performance. And I'm a huge Frank Darabont fan. And that movie was placed in an era of Citizen Kane and making like B movies and propaganda movies, and it had a lot to do with communism at the time. And Jim Carrey was forced to, Jim Carrey's character was forced to testify and name names in the film by the end. It was a great scene. I don't know if you ever watched it before. So it has, I thought.
I actually haven't seen it since the theater. I barely remember it. I just remember the funny thing about The Majestic is I remember when I first got a DVD player and I started buying DVDs, I had it in my head I needed to own every Jim Carrey movie, even though I knew I was probably not going to watch The Majestic again anytime soon. So I probably still own it since buying all those Jim Carrey movies. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What was the next
one? No, I'm looking at the DVD right now. I have a, it's like an old, the old like paper type Warner Brothers DVDs way back in the day.
Oh, those were nice.
But it has a lot to do with, like we talked about, the fear propaganda, naming names, and, you know, the trying to get work in Hollywood at the time with the corporate overlords giving in to political pressure. And it was a huge political component to make that I don't know people appreciate with Upton Sinclair and the studios and what's the name of the Randolph Hearst.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That battle right there to control the media and to take Upton Sinclair down in his campaign. That really, those themes resonated heavily with me from The Majestic, which that's a small part of the movie. It's kind of like an underlying theme. And Mank is more prevalent. But I think that's a good puzzle piece for Mank.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I maybe we'll have to revisit that movie one of these days, because like I said, I haven't seen it since the theater. But yeah, a lot of those themes coming up in that movie, that is a good piece for sure. I will go on to another piece. For this one, I'm not going to go with a specific movie, but I'm going to go with someone who was a collaborator for Fincher at one point, and that is Aaron Sorkin, and just his kind of way of writing. I feel like there's a lot of that Aaron Sorkin energy in this movie where,
yeah,
it's just snappy. It keeps going. It absolutely does not hold your hand at all. And if you aren't keeping up, you know, oh, well, you're just not going to be able to follow along everything that's happening. And it's definitely a movie that I think rewards multiple viewings. I think because there's so much going on and so many characters and so much to keep up with. But definitely there's just a lot of that kind of Aaron Sorkin energy to this, even though it's not, you know, written by him.
Coming around at the same time as The Trial of Chicago 7. I think it really, that did resonate with me, the dialogue. And I always wonder if with movies now switching to streaming, it could be that way for the foreseeable future, how that might ruin the flow of movies. Because I can see a lot of people pausing it and rewinding it to catch what someone said.
That's interesting.
I wonder what people have done that with Mank and if that's ruined the experience for them.
Especially for a movie that is so dedicated to recreating a feeling of classic Hollywood, like down to the whole reverb on the audio thing, which, by the way, kind of drove me nuts. I was not really a fan of the reverb on the audio, but yeah, I mean, for a movie that's trying to capture that old cinema to allow people to just like rewind and replay scenes and all that stuff, it's very strange. But we're in strange times, so.
People love retro.
Yeah, they sure do. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Well, I kind of like The Social Network, and I'll tell you why. I know it's not, how to put this, it's definitely not something that's comparable, like you would think right away. Most of my picks really aren't, though. But it's a very, very, the main character is very unlikable, and he's very determined. Mm-hmm. And it's also about taking credit for someone else's work. And
right.
You could argue that, you know, if someone had the idea, they would have done it. But with him taking the idea from the twins and making his own is almost something like what Citizen Kane and Mank had. And to me, the Jesse Eisenberg character, or the portraying Mark Zuckerberg, is kind of a combination of both people, of Citizen Kane and Mank. And Mank's very much more likable than most people will give it credit for. But I think it's almost a combination of both characters, the controlling nature of Orson Welles and the drive to be great, I think is very comparable to the film.
Yeah.
And Aaron Sorkin's dialogue. A lot of that reminded me of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I hadn't thought of that, but this definitely, as far as like where it fits in with other David Fincher films, I mean, that's definitely the one I think to go to as a connection. And yeah, everything you were saying there about the Mark Zuckerberg character and taking credit for what other people have done. And like, there's a lot of that. And especially the main character that's kind of unlikable because, Mank, you could see how like being in a circle, he might've been like intoxicating, but likable, not really.
Yeah. And
especially towards.
I was surprised how many the characters just seem to put up with him. I don't know in real life that would be, especially since he's regulated to writing screenplays in the background, not getting credit for things. I would be surprised if people really put up with that. We talk about corporate overloads and power. In my experience, they don't take too well to that.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go ahead with another piece here. And this kind of goes along with what we were just talking about the idea of, recreating, that feeling of old Hollywood with the film, with some of the things like shooting in black and white, with like some of the, film degradation effects, the sound things they did. I thought of Tarantino's Grindhouse, which, really takes a lot of effort to recreate a certain time and a certain kind of film that, the movie isn't, obviously. It's a new, like, prestige, like, Oscar type of film. It's taking advantage of a lot of the new technologies, like shooting digitally and things like that, but at the same time, just taking a lot of effort to recreate that old style of cinema. And strangely, I guess it didn't do the same aspect ratio as those older films, which I don't know why they stopped there. I don't know why they went all the way. Even Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, they made themselves only use old instruments for the scores. I don't know why they didn't go all the way, but they went a lot of the way.
No, that's a great point. I've actually never seen Grindhouse.
Oh yeah,
that's one of the few blind spots I have with Tarantino.
It's actually my last time at the West Wind Drive-In here in Vegas. I need to go one of these days.
Never been there either.
Yeah?
Have you been back to the theater since COVID, by the way?
I have not. I have not been back. I can't bring myself to do it. Like, I've thought about it like, it's just one movie. Like, I'll go see Tenet or something. But I can't do it for one movie. Like, once I go back once, I'm just going to be back constantly. So I'd rather wait till it's
probably buy $100 and buy out the theater to sit alone. But I still don't know if it's worth it.
Exactly. Yeah. But we'll see. Hopefully next year we'll be back. That's all we could hope for.
Yeah.
So what do you got next? I got one more piece after that.
I got Trumbo.
Okay.
Have you seen Trumbo?
I did see Trumbo.
I think it's very... I kind of think this is what Meg probably was in real life. I kind of love Trumbo. I think it's funny. I love the performance by Bryan Cranston. And while obviously there's not a parallel, I don't think there was rumors of Mank being part of the Communist Party or active membership. But just the themes of trying to tell a story and get credit for your work with Trumbo and having to work behind the scenes, I think really is a good kind of puzzle piece for the film.
Yeah.
I think movies like a couple movies later to be made. So that's one movie I would say.
Yeah, I actually considered including it on my list as well. I think there's a very clear line between Trumbo, Hail Caesar, and now Mank. Mm-hmm. I think, all kind of coming from a similar place, all telling that story of, the people who made the stories.
Classic Hollywood and propaganda.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And telling the story of these creatives and the people who brought us these classics. So I think that it's absolutely a great piece and worth mentioning here.
And when we start punishing creatives for being creative, it kind of like is the end of, telling truth to power, in my opinion. I think that's a lot of what these films have to do with.
For sure. So for my last puzzle piece, I've got to go with my favorite movie about a screenwriter, which is, of course, Adaptation from Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze, with Nicolas Cage playing Charlie Kaufman. And it's my favorite movie, but obviously the story doesn't really connect too much with Mank, you know, with the stories that's being told. But the thing that I thought was an interesting comparison here is about how a creative person is kind of only considered to be as good as their most recent project, and how like they kind of lose the cache of everything that's come before, all the things that they were working on before that they had successes with. But now it's like, well, what do you have for me now? That seems to be like what Hollywood and what really the world in general kind of says to people, especially creative people.
What have you done for me lately?
Yep, exactly.
If what you did was great, but didn't do well, you know, as a chance, that's not going to help you either. That's a great choice. I had
exactly.
That was on my list. I was going to talk about, but I left it off because trying to talk about a Charlie Kaufman film is tough on its own, to tell you the truth. But I think that's a great choice for one of the puzzle pieces.
I tried to do it 3 times this year on this podcast. So
did you do it for the I Think of Anything?
Yes, we did an episode on that. We did a special Missing Pieces episode on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And then we also did his book, Ant Kind. So there's a lot of Charlie Kaufman this year.
Well, that's got to be a fascinating one. I'll have to listen to that one.
Oh, yeah. It was fun. It was fun. So I'm going to go ahead and do the finished puzzle here and list out all the movies we just talked about. And then we'll get into some closing thoughts. But the finished puzzle for Mank includes, of course, Citizen Kane, as well as Can You Ever Forgive Me?, Hail Caesar. We also squeezed Judy in there as well. The Majestic, Aaron Sorkin Dialogue, The Social Network, Trumbo, and Adaptation. So, you know, a lot of, obviously, things about movie making, about screenwriters, about classic Hollywood, and about, you know, there's so much of that Hollywood politics line in this that is, you know, written by a lot of these movies, and is really, I think, the most interesting thing about this movie, even though there's a lot of interesting things about this movie. I mean, just the story itself of Mankiewicz and you know, Orson Welles and that whole thing. I think there's a lot to this movie. There's a lot to get out of it. And it's, even though, I mean, I'm pretty sure you loved it. I remember your review of it. I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it as much, but there's so much to this movie. It's just so like meaty.
I just like, and I love your comparison about Aaron Sorkin. I really put that, it's very entertaining. I call it wildly entertaining because it really combines, like you said, about that snappy dialogue, and that's what The Social Network, you know, I didn't think about the Sorkin dialogue at the time with that movie. With Mank, and it's just taking old Hollywood, combination of old Hollywood, the snappy dialogue, the performance by Gary Oldman, by the way, which is also really different than everything he's ever done. He usually plays these brash like characters, and Mank really isn't that brash. He is an alcoholic, but he's always like a charming alcoholic. He seems to be a functioning alcoholic, but he never seems to play roles like this ever. And the whole film, like, and this, how it connects to politics today, it's just, it's almost like a timeless theme that never goes out of style, even since like the 1940s. It's never changed. So political corruption, propaganda, slimy business tactics, all in like, you know, old Hollywood. To me, it's a, I don't think people give enough credit, but I also think it's very, it's made for a certain type of people. So I'm would be really surprised if mainstream audiences enjoy it as much as like I did or cinephiles do.
Yeah, it does definitely seem to be the kind of movie that's like made for cinephiles, made for film critics, made for film Twitter, maybe. You know, it's definitely a movie you've got to be a fan of the history of movies to like really kind of dig into. But like we said, I mean, there is still plenty to get out of it, even if you're not into all that. So hopefully people connect with it regardless.
I agree.
So I think that about does it for Mank. I always like to ask my guests to recommend another movie they watched recently that they enjoyed and would like to recommend to our listeners.
Let me look. A couple things I haven't written about yet. I haven't had the time. Mm-hmm. Nomadland. If you've seen that yet, it's a very good movie. Not as good as The Rider, I think, but it's a very good movie. A great performance by Frances McDormand. I've seen a couple of critics from like New York City, Los Angeles calling it a movie about middle America. I don't think it's about middle America, but I think that's a really, really good movie. What were your thoughts on it?
Oh, I absolutely loved it. And I agree with you. It's not really about middle America. It's about a certain subsect of America that, you know, maybe there's a lot of that in middle America, but it's about something different. And yeah, I mean, her performance is fantastic. I actually still have not seen The Rider, and I definitely need to watch it before I go and do like an episode.
Man, you have to watch
this.
That movie.
Yeah. I definitely need to see that.
Oh, it's amazing. And the one other one I would like to talk about, just bring up, is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and Sound of Metal too.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to that.
So Sound of Metal is out now. Ma Rainey is coming out in a week or two, the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that movie has a lot of themes that are really relevant today as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, Sound of Metal, fantastic, of course.
Great performance by Riz Ahmed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this was great. I'm so glad that you're able to join me for this episode. Why don't you tell people again where they can find you and your writing?
Well, my name is M.N. Miller. I write for the greatest website in the history of the world, Ready, Steady, Cut, based out in the UK, but they are worldwide. You can find me there. I also have an authory page. You can check out my articles. I also write a great article called The Best Film Podcast. And guess who was featured in it?
Who was featured in it?
You, David Rosen, your podcast. I wrote it back last January, February, so check that article out as well. I really appreciate you having me. I love talking movies. My wife's always telling me, go find someone else to talk about movies. So I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Well, I absolutely appreciate you joining me, and hopefully we'll get you back again for another movie next year.
Of course.
Do you love movies? I certainly do. Hi, Chris Roberts here, inviting you to listen to I Saw It on Linden Street, our weekly podcast dedicated to the joy of finding an appreciation in cult films, exploitation oddities, beloved classics, and all points in between. Join us for an informative deep dive into a film that we feel needs to be recognized, with background thrown in on actors, directors, and hey, if I'm doing my job right, you'll get a funny story out of me. So, join us here at I Saw It on Linden Street and listen today. Remember, folks, life's too short not to live in the past. Take it easy.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Mank. Go check it out. It's out on Netflix right now. Apparently not doing that well, which is very strange. I mean, for a movie that is, that was so anticipated by so many people. People love David Fincher, and of course people love Citizen Kane. But I guess it just kind of goes to show you that, the world of film Twitter and film critics and film nerds doesn't always really match up with the rest of the world. So I guess that's a valuable lesson for somebody to learn. I don't know who. Maybe me? I'm not sure. But anyway, thanks to M.N. Miller for joining me for that one. And if you are enjoying Piecing It Together, we'd appreciate it if you subscribed wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And of course, we would really appreciate it if you shared this podcast. We are always just trying to get the word out about what we're doing here. So share away. You can, of course, rate and review us as well over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We appreciate that a whole bunch. I love getting feedback on the show. Also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where I'm sure we'll be arguing and complaining about streaming movies ruining cinema. That'll be me doing the complaining, but don't worry. If you don't think that that's the case, there'll be plenty of people taking the other side of the argument as well. So that's what's happening over there. Over here on the podcast, we have a ton of new episodes coming your way. We should have 2 a week for the rest of the year. And then we got some special episodes and just all kinds of stuff. Lots and lots of movies to cover. Lots and lots of episodes coming your way. So again, make sure you're subscribed. And we really appreciate that. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like we always do. And let's see, what should I play today? I'm trying to think of something that would fit with this, but I don't know if I've got anything. I want to go with something a little bit, a little jazzy-ish or something, go along with that Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross score. I'm going to go with something from my soundtrack album, Beater, And this was from a film called To Cherish the Time. And I'm going to play the track called Memories of a Time. So this is from Beater, the original motion picture soundtrack, which, if you haven't heard me talk about this before, is a compilation album of a feature film score that I composed called Beater. And then the scores from a bunch of short films that I worked on with the same director, Christopher Johnson, who I'm actually going to be working on another feature with next year. So who knows, maybe I'll end up putting that out as a soundtrack. But yeah, so this is from one of the short films that's also on the album. So enjoy this track, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming out real soon.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.